This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Coming up on today's show, a Get Out the Vote effort that does more than just encourage people to go to the polls. But first, the largest gathering of minority-owned companies in the country, the National Minority Supplier Development Council Conference, is being held in Chicago next week. More and more large companies are realizing the value of working with a diverse group of suppliers, which can include minority, women, and veteran-owned businesses. Joining us to talk about supplier diversity and what a strategy of diversity and inclusion can mean to a company are President of RCF Group and United Way Greater Cincinnati Board of Directors Chairman Carl Satterwhite and Corporate Supplier Diversity Manager at Procter & Gamble Andrew Butler. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Andy and Carl, so good to see both of you this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Thanks
Pleasure
for having
to
us.
Be here.
Andy, explain to us, what does this mean? What is supplier diversity?
Sure. For us, we define supplier diversity. This has been our business strategy since 1976 to grow and develop our supply side business with companies that are owned and operated by women, minorities, LGBT, U.S. military veterans. The idea is really to have an intentional level of diversity in our supply network, the same way we might look at our employee base.
Now, P&G has been doing this for, what, 40 years now, four decades?
Correct, 40 yep. years, that's right.
What kind of experience has P&G had with this? What have you seen from this?
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the history here, what started really as a government compliance program in many ways evolved over the years into social responsibility. And really over the last 15 years, Mark, we would say for us a competitive advantage, a business strategy, something that we believe there's always a premise statement that one of our former CEO, A.G. Laffley, used to say, I believe a diverse team will outthink, out innovate, and outperform a homogeneous team. And that's really the principle behind the value of supplier diversity.
Carla, what makes this important? Why is this so crucial?
Well, what really makes this important, that it did kind of start as a mandate. You know, this was kind of governmentally led at one point, and then there was times that it had gone through programs and you know, had all kinds of baggage to it that really didn't represent what it was all about. And it really has now graduated to a movement. It's about how do you provide value. So it's measured in much different terms than it had been at its onset. Now it's really about what value do you bring and how's that value measured? How do you prove it?
So, Andy, how do you know you're dealing with a diverse supplier? Are they certified? Is that typically what you look for?
It's a great question for us. Certification is very important. We want to make sure that the suppliers that are part of our supplier diversity program meet the spirit and the intent of supplier diversity. So there's third-party organizations out there. You mentioned the National Minority Supplier Development Council. They're one of the largest that certifies companies to make sure that they're 51% owned and operated by whether it's minority, woman, LGBT, U.S. military veteran. And again, it ensures that when we're working with these companies, it's really driving this wealth building and the intentional diversity that we're trying to create with this program.
Carla, the National Minority Supplier Development Council, the conference is going to be in Chicago next week. Has that been something that's been growing over the years? Are we seeing more and more people take an interest in this?
Absolutely. Not only corporations, but I think that it truly has turned into a movement in that corporations and organizations are looking within their works to define what value supplier diversity means to them. So, you know, many corporations have different value propositions and ways of measuring the value of this. But in that, they're inspiring others. So now, not just Fortune 500s or Fortune 1000s, Fortune 5000s. We have conscious corporations who are bringing in their first-tier suppliers to get them experiences and understanding how this movement is affecting the world, not just their corporation.
So I'd be interested in both of you, your perspectives on this. For the average person, the average consumer, what does this mean? Why should they be concerned about supplier diversity?
It's a great question. It's one that Carl and I talk a lot about. I would summarize it in one phrase, economic inclusion. So if you think about the power of economic inclusion, it's kind of this classic give a person a fish, they'll eat for a day, teach a person a fish, they'll eat for a lifetime type of thing, where when we can intentionally bring diverse suppliers in, build their capability, help them grow with a large company like P&G or some of the other great corporations here in the greater Cincinnati area, we know it improves our community, it helps grow jobs, it helps grow wealth, it helps people reinvest back in the community. And from a business standpoint, very pragmatically, we also believe it improves our innovation and go-to-market capabilities as well. It's about creating that vibrancy.
And I think that's really the core. But let's look on the other side of that. So we have all ethnicities and races inside of our community. So imagine a world where all of us are truly putting into our communities that which we see. So now we are prosperous in the community like all the rest of our neighbors, and we're able to push into that. So we have folks giving themselves of time, talent, and resources to give back to the communities that they care about so that we all can see our grandkids enjoy the spaces where we grew up.
And from a business standpoint, I would think that this is about not limiting your options, that this is a good, safe strategy for a business to follow anyhow.
That's exactly right. I think you summarized it well. It's not limiting your options. It's a matter of ensuring that all groups, all organizations, all types of companies have an opportunity to do business with P&G. And it's not necessarily to say that everyone will do business with us, but sometimes the greatest innovations, the greatest capabilities come from a small startup, from someone that we wouldn't normally see or interact with. And that's where supplier diversity creates value. It's where conferences like the one that you just mentioned, where we have an opportunity to interact with these types of companies, can really be beneficial for a company like Procter & Gamble.
So, and beyond that, I think too, for a company, this safeguards your supply chain. In case one supplier has trouble, you've got all kinds of suppliers and options you can turn to because, again, you're not limiting yourself.
You got it. We work with Procter & Gamble over 50,000 suppliers globally today. In the United States, over 1,500 diverse-owned suppliers. And it's for that exact reason. Each one of them creates different value for us. We want to make sure they're congruent with our business strategies and principles, but it does create that diversity of thought, that diversity of capability as well.
And let's not forget competition. So competition drives innovation oftentimes. So now that you have different thoughts coming in on opportunities, it's going to drive incumbents to think different. It's going to drive new perspective suppliers to come in and think, bring your best game forward so that the company ultimately wins.
So what are some of the common misconceptions, though, about supplier diversity, some of the challenges that you face?
Well, I think largely it's really that it's some kind of program. This is a program of the day, or that this is something that a company's going to pay more for a value that's not really there, and there's going to be some inferior solutions. And the real reality is that corporations who really understand this understand that there's a value proposition that can come to them as well as the suppliers they do business with. So now you truly are getting the best of the best. You're getting your incumbents to strengthen their game. In many cases, diverse suppliers may even work with majority suppliers, come together, bring a better solution in the end game. So it's really not about an either or. It's about driving best value to corporate America, which is demanding that.
Are there people who might argue that you're following quotas?
Oh, absolutely. There's folks who believe that that's still the case. And the truth is that is how it started in many ways. That was kind of how this started. And that's why I say it changed from a program to a movement. Before, it was really measured by dollars and only, dollars and input. Today, it's really measured by value. It's measured by return on investment. It's measured by innovation, creativity, invention, all those things that are important to any good business. It's measured in those same factors.
Another common misperception, I think, that's out there to your question, Mark, is that you have to reduce your standards to work with diverse suppliers, and that's simply not the case. We actually have data that indicates that our diverse suppliers in some cases actually outperform the average, and I think it gets back to this idea of when you're working with smaller companies, when you're working with diversity of thought, you're going to get greater innovation. You're going to get greater capability along with that. And sometimes we can work directly with those companies. Sometimes, as Carl alluded to, they're going to work with some of our suppliers to really be able to permeate the entire supply chain.
So, Andy, tell us about what you do, what P&G does on
Sure.
a day-to-day basis as far as finding and managing suppliers.
Absolutely. So my role resides in our purchases organization, which owns and manages supplier relationships. So my role is really to govern the overall strategy. And there are actually a lot of other great corporations in Cincinnati, Kroger, Cintas, Macy's, Toyota, all have someone in my very similar position. In terms of finding new suppliers, we may be in a mode, as we are right now, where we're not actively seeking new suppliers in a lot of areas. But we're always on the lookout for new partners that can really help us drive innovation, drive productivity. Part of how we do that is through really simple online registration tools. If someone wants to be a supplier to P&G, then go to pgsupplier.com and register. We go and look through all of those submissions to really understand what's going on from a landscape standpoint. Another way that we go out and look are these conferences that you mentioned. It's an opportunity for us to engage and interface directly with human beings, with these business owners, to talk to them directly around what they do, how they create value, And some of those can translate into business opportunities down the road.
And Carl, tell us about RCF Corporation. Mm-hmm. and how big a company has that become?
Well, you know, RCF Group really was kind of the first company to come out of the Cincinnati's Minority Business Accelerator. So soon after our civil unrest, and corporations like Procter & Gamble that supported what I'll call access and opportunity. That's really all that was kind of guaranteed, was the ability to be included in the process. No guarantee of work, clearly no guarantee of paying more for less. So that gave us the opportunity to have a small beginnings, and today we're a $70 million company. So I'll give a little more detail about the conference. At the conference in Chicago, there'll be corporations there from Allstate to Wachovia. So you're talking everybody's covered, all industries. All of them are sending senior leaders like Andrew to say, what is the best practices across the country? What suppliers have the capability to work internationally, nationally? Where can we bring value? What best practices might a diverse supplier be able to bring that we don't have today? A problem they've solved in one industry that could be pivoted to another industry. So it's a great collaboration of corporate minds, entrepreneurial minds that come together. And we also have diversity practitioners that will come there so that, again, that this movement can move beyond just business and permeate into communities across the country.
What kind of impact does supplier diversity have on job creation?
I think that is the driver. That's the whole piece of it. So you're talking about the opportunity that supplier diversity can come in. Again, it's got to prove value. It has to win with corporate America. But then it has to identify other talents within the communities that we work in. So we've been able to take our workforce from basically 2 employees to 110 employees today. We got offices in other cities. We've been able to grow our business as we serve corporate America with a value proposition that is measurably of quality.
I think the other important point for me there is there's data that clearly indicates that diverse-owned suppliers hire a larger proportion of women, minorities, and typically underrepresented people as a whole. We actually track that for our supply base. So when I look at a micro level here in Cincinnati, just as a quick data point, we do a little over $500 million a year with diverse-owned businesses based in the greater Cincinnati area. And we'll go back and track how many employees they're hiring, how many employees that are directly focused on P&G business. And I apologize, I don't have those exact statistics in front of me, but it's really about ensuring that it's driving, I come back to this idea of the spirit and the intent of supplier diversity beyond just the numbers that we track.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us to discuss supplier diversity and what a strategy of diversity and inclusion can mean to a company are President of RCF Group and United Way of Greater Cincinnati Board of Directors Chairman Carl Satterwhite and Corporate Supplier Diversity Manager at Procter & Gamble, Andrew Butler. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Carl, how do you think Cincinnati is doing when it comes to the number of diverse suppliers it has and creating an environment where these diverse suppliers can thrive?
Well, I think Cincinnati is well above the norm. Cincinnati is doing a great job, and really it's because of the corporations in this community. So we have corporations who truly care about this conversation, truly care about providing opportunity and access for diverse suppliers to be able to engage in a significant way. On a personal note for me, I've been able to work with majority partners here. So I have majority partners in the community as well. So a lot of times, I think, to your earlier point around misconceptions, there's a misconception that this is all about race. And really, diversity is about thought. It's not really about race or gender. It's about diversity of thought and how do we do things differently. And I remember sitting down with Johnny Plains, fourth generation owner of Plains, moving his stores, and sitting down and saying, how can we work together that which would grow your business, grow our business, and provide a value proposition to corporate America? We did that 10 years ago, still doing business today. So we're not in competition. We're in about value creation. How do we do that together?
So thought leadership is very important in promoting this.
Thought leadership for sure. And I think to build on that point, I look at three big reasons why Cincinnati is on the map, so to speak, a hotbed of supplier diversity. The corporations, as Carl said, are definitely one part of that. We also have a fantastic base of diverse-owned businesses as well. I mean, Carl is living proof of that right here. We could go down a list of just amazing companies and entrepreneurs who have been able to create companies solving business needs of the Fortune 500 companies right here in the greater Cincinnati area. The third ingredient, though, and one that I think is really important, are the support organizations. Carl mentioned the Minority Business Accelerator, which is one of the most fantastic organizations in the country. We have local affiliate chambers of some of these large national organizations. Ohio Minority Supplier Development Council, an organization called the Ohio River Valley Women's Business Council. So I realize that can be a bit of an alphabet soup, but these are great organizations that are here to support, advocate for, and connect diverse suppliers with corporations as well.
Andy, in the case of Procter & Gamble, any large corporation that's dealing in all the different markets across the world, like the P&G does diversity also deal with differences in culture, differences in language, those types of things?
It absolutely does. And I think it's all congruent. It all kind of resonates together. And I will say that our supplier diversity program specifically has historically been a United States-focused approach. We actually recently launched a global supplier diversity program, specifically with a focus on women-owned businesses. And for us, if you look at who our consumers are, if you look at where there are support organizations that can help us, it's a really logical place for us to start. But I come back to it's really all embedded with our roots here in Cincinnati and learning. Just as a quick example, we're starting to create women's business development programs in other countries, Turkey, China, Mexico. That's all founded on a program we started 2 years ago right here in Cincinnati to coach and develop local women-owned businesses.
What are some of the hurdles that a small diversity supplier faces when they're trying to get attention of companies? Is that the biggest thing, just getting attention?
Well, not really. I mean, it's not necessarily about the attention as much as it is defining your own value proposition. So, you know, the support organizations that Andy talks about are what we really have to learn to do. So a lot of times we may have a brand new entrepreneur that wants to go out there solo, and that is going to be a challenge because they don't understand necessarily how corporations purchase today. So really our work is how do we network? You know, and this is women and minorities. How do we network in a way that would equip us to better be prepared to present to corporations, particularly in this area? Because Fortune 1000s in Cincinnati understand diversity better because Fortune 500s have understood diversity much better.
Now, Carl, you'd mentioned, Carl, the civil unrest that Cincinnati experienced back in 2001. Expand on the idea of how that helped to benefit diverse businesses in the city.
I think what really happened is our corporate core, as well as many of our supporting organizations, really came together and identified economic inclusion as the challenge, as the problem. And then they really went further to say it's about access and opportunity. We had a group, an organization called Cincinnati Can, that kind of partnered with Corporate America and many of our organizations. Our chamber was involved. So we had a lot of strong organizations. And Procter & Gamble was at the helm. The Chamber of Commerce was engaged. Dinsmore & Shohl was engaged because they had also lent some leadership to the organization and Mr. Calvin Buford, who I believe is connected to your organization. So we were able to bring that kind of brain trust together to say, okay, how are we going to make a difference? And part of that was making sure that minority firms were equipped. But part of that was making sure they got fair access and opportunity to procurement. So that kind of came together, driven by leaders who really cared, and the city decided we're going to be different. No different than the focus on 3CDC to change things and over the Rhine. We want to change things with supplier diversity and make Cincinnati a better place to live, work, and play. And that was a focus that still continues today.
Andy, is Procter & Gamble doing more with veteran-owned suppliers as well?
Actually, yes. We've had veterans as a part of our supply diversity program for many years. We've taken a much more intentional approach over the last few years. We actually have a gentleman named Kevin Queen in our purchasing organization who's a Naval Academy grad that's kind of taken up the mantle, so to speak, of helping to drive that. And I think it gets back to this idea of intentional diversity in our supply network, really ensuring that the same way we look at diversity and inclusion within our own company is how we look at it in our supply base. So we're definitely doing a lot of business with veteran-owned companies today, and it's something that we want to continue to expand on as part of the overall approach that we take.
Yeah, we've been talking about the private companies, the private sector, and how it deals with suppliers, diverse suppliers. How are we doing in this area in terms of the public sector dealing with supplier diversity?
Well, see, I think we have some of the same. In many cases, public sector still may be doing counting and making sure that there's numbers being met. But specific to Cincinnati, what we have is a public coming to talk to the corporate. So they're coming and learning how Procter & Gamble, Macy's, Kroger's, and Toyota, why is this important? And they're understanding at a leadership level so that they can bring that back to their organizations. And again, this is about value. So this is not, it's really not about just race or gender any longer. It's about the proper race and gender that can have access and opportunity, that can prove a value proposition, that can come and perform. So it really has changed, and I believe specifically, again, this is why Cincinnati has been so uniquely different. There's been an opening of the doors from corporate America to say, we'll share with you what we're learning in this space. Procter & Gamble's been doing this a long time. They have a lot of intel, but they've been willing to share that intel with anyone who wants to understand more about this movement.
So, Carl, you've described it as a movement. Where do you see the movement headed in the future?
I believe in the future this is going to be about diverse minority and women organizations now pushing behind community change. You know, last night I was in an organization with Children's Hospital talking about childhood poverty. So, you know, I'm the chair of United Way, but as a business leader, I care about the city. So I'm also saying, what's my role in changing poverty for children in this community? So I think we'll see, as minority and women firms become more stable, more sustainable, they'll realize, okay, now you have a role in the community. And if you look now, you'll see more minorities and women serving on our nonprofit boards, serving in their communities, volunteering. So we're starting to get a bigger influx of give back and understanding that doing good and doing well is the end goal.
So you see this as more than a business issue, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Oh, absolutely. This is really about, I mean, I'm born and raised here. This is about, how do my grandkids make a decision to stay here and not want to go to somewhere that seems faster, quicker, or brighter, but they understand that this is a place they can thrive. And we don't see color and race. We see the world in one glass, that everybody's fair and equitable.
Andy, where do you see this heading in the future?
Well, I agree with Carl, certainly. And I think the other thing from a corporate standpoint is, we talked a little bit about this 51% owned and operated definition. I think that remains important as we think about wealth building and really capability building and opportunities for folks. I think we've got to be able to look further and beyond that as well. We need to look much more intentionally at employee makeup, at how folks are involved in the community. And we're starting to see some of our customers, like Walmart's and Kroger's of the world, do that. It's something that I think we need to take a close look at in the corporate world as well.
But I take it you're like Carl, you see this as more than just a business issue.
Oh, absolutely.
This has a ripple effect.
Absolutely. It's one of the amazing things that we can do as a company that simultaneously has a transformational impact on both our business in terms of shareholder return and on the communities in which we live and work. And it's part of the reason that we're so proud of it and why I'm so excited to continue to advance this.
So what would you say to a company that's not reached this level yet, that hasn't experienced this yet and is thinking about, I do need to be more diverse in who I do business with?
I would say get started. And I know it sounds really simple, but it's easy, I think, and we talk to a lot of companies that maybe haven't done this, and they say, well, I'm not where a P&G is, I'm not where a Kroger is. And my advice would be, go join your local chamber, your local council. Start to work with diverse suppliers. Start to go to these conferences and interact with them. You don't need to spend $1 billion a year with diverse suppliers to really make an impact on this. You'll see the benefits and the value almost immediately, but you've got to be intentional about it. This is not something that's going to happen by accident.
And Carl, what would your advice be?
Same way. You just got to get started. I mean, part of this, I believe, is really understanding it differently. So it really doesn't matter where you are today. Just don't stay there. So how do you now start asking questions, start inviting folks in? Maybe you look within your own supply chain, and you may have women and minorities in your supply chain. Bring them in for a conversation. You know, start having talks about the value proposition. Start having talks about how Cincinnati is different. Same thing we're having here, that would allow for some education to happen, because at some level, we have something to give to each other, so we can share our own experiences.
Andy and Carl, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
President of RCF Group and United Way of Greater Cincinnati Board of Directors Chairman Carl Satterwhite, and Corporate Supplier Diversity Manager at Procter & Gamble, Andrew Butler. Coming up, we'll talk about a new initiative to encourage Greater Cincinnati residents to not just vote, but to become active and engaged in their communities. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.